But I think some of the things that worked for us in, you know, working through that marriage breakup and still staying good friends and co-founders was just being really open with our communication with each other, being very empathetic about how each other were feeling, and kind of working through that together. So ultimately, about 10 years after starting Shoes of Prey, we had to make the very difficult decision to close the business down. My big takeout out of the best way to do consumer research is, you know, it's good to talk to customers and ask what they want, but it's even better if you can watch their behavior.
Hi everyone, welcome to this episode of the Make It Happen show, where it's time for you to make it happen. In these implementation sessions, we're joined by an industry expert who'll take you through in detail how to make it happen in your business. These are full of implementable actions, so get your pens ready, take notes, and be ready to apply these to your business. Let's get into it.
Thanks so much for having me. I was previously a co-founder and CEO of Shoes of Prey, and then I've gone on to co-found and be the CEO of meat alternative business Fable Food Company. For the session today, I wanted to take you through my entrepreneurial journey, the roller coaster ride of Shoes of Prey from building up that business to ultimately having to close it down. And then I'll share briefly some of the lessons that I took from that experience at Shoes of Prey, and how I've been applying those at Fable Food Company. So for those of you who don't know Shoes of Prey, it was a fashion technology business where women could design their own shoes. They designed their own shoes online, we made them and delivered them to customers. So we launched the business in 2009. Three of us co-founded the business, myself, my wife at the time, Jodie Fox, and one of our good friends, Michael Knapp. We'd all met at studying university together in Brisbane, had gone on to work some different jobs and wanted to, you know, take the entrepreneurial leap and start a business together. So we had this concept that women would want to design their own shoes. So we launched the business in 2009, and initially we did really well in this niche of very creative, passionate consumers, but it was a relatively small niche. We also had this a lot of fashion consumers coming to our website and not purchasing. So we ran some focus groups, did some market research, did consumer interviews to understand who these consumers were that were coming to our site and not buying. And what we realized was we had sort of more than 10,000 consumers a day not purchasing, and these consumers were mass market fashion consumers. So they loved the idea of designing their own shoes, but they told us that they wanted us to change three things in order to be able to place an order with us. So firstly, they wanted a more simplified shoe design experience than the one that we'd built for that creative, passionate customer. Secondly, they wanted a sub 2 week lead time from when they ordered their shoes to when they received their shoes. And at the time we were taking about 5 weeks to deliver shoes. And then thirdly, they didn't want to pay a premium for designing. They wanted to pay the same price for similar quality shoes. So we looked at these three things and we sort of worked it through and we realized, well, yeah, we can deliver this value proposition to this mass market consumer. And if we do that, you know, we should be able to scale our business from this being this little niche fashion, profitable fashion business that we'd built over the first 2 years into a business that, you know, could potentially change the fashion landscape and allow people to design not only their own shoes, but even other fashion items. But in order to make that leap from that creative niche that we were operating in over to that mass market fashion consumer, we were going to need to raise capital, because to deliver on that value proposition, to deliver on those three things that mass market consumer told us she wanted, we were going to need to build our own shoe factory to speed up the delivery times and bring down our unit costs. And we were going to have to hire software engineers and user experience people to be able to simplify the shoe design experience. So we went out and raised some capital and we ended up raising money for a number of venture capital firms in Australia. So we used that with that money, we went out and embarked on building our own shoe factory. So we did that initially in the business serving the creative niche. We'd been outsourcing the shoe manufacturing, but in order to speed up the lead times and bring down the unit costs, we had to build our own shoe factory. So we did that in China. And over the next 5 years, we ended up building up a team of about 160 people in China. And we developed all the processes to be able to make shoes one at a time, cost effectively and quickly and efficiently. Fast forward 5 years, as we built out that value proposition, we were delivering shoes in under 2 weeks. We actually, in our last year, averaged 11 days for when we delivered shoes to customers. Secondly, we brought our unit costs down, so we were charging the same retail prices, the same quality shoes. At the same time, we built out our software engineering team and user experience people and simplified the shoe design experience. So you could now shop a range of shoes like you would on any other website, and then you could just modify that design. So really, really simple design experience. I thought I'd take a little side journey here and tell a bit of a personal story at this point in the presentation, and one on kind of relates to working with your life partner and having them as a business partner. So as I mentioned before, Jody, one of the co-founders in Shoes of Prey, was my wife at the time that we'd started the business, and actually our third co-founder, Mike, had been a groomsman at our wedding. Jody and I had met at the age of 20 and 21. We'd married at 24 and 25. We'd started Shoes of Prey a couple of years later. But by the time we sort of hit our late 20s, early 30s, we'd realized we were doing really well as business partners. We were still really good friends, but it wasn't working out for us as a married couple. So we kind of worked through that, and in the end decided to separate and divorce as a married couple. It was a pretty interesting and at times challenging journey when we had this business baby in Shoes of Prey that we were doing together. I think in some ways we were fortunate that it was a mutual decision to separate. So I think that helped make it easier to be able to stay friends and to be able to work together. We ended up separating, divorcing about 4 years into the Shoes of Prey journey, and then continued working together pretty much every day for the next 6 years in the business. And we've both gone on now to remarry and got children in our other marriages, and we're still good friends today. We still catch up every couple of weeks. I thought I'd share that journey because it's a slightly different and I think some people find it kind of an interesting journey on working with co-founders and how those relationships can sometimes be a little bit challenging along the way. But I think some of the things that worked for us in working through that marriage breakup and still staying good friends and co-founders was just being really open with our communication with each other, being very empathetic about how each other were feeling, and kind of working through that together.
Hey team, it's Jack again. I hope you're enjoying this episode of the Make It Happen show. If you're a business owner who wants to elevate every area of your life, you want to create a vision for your life so compelling that you're literally pulled towards it. You want to create a roadmap that not only ensures you're showing up every day as your best self, but your experience of life is one of fulfillment, happiness, and success. Then you have to join me at the Elevated Entrepreneur Experience. Head to www.the-entourage.com/event, and I look forward to seeing you there. Now, let's get back to the show.
Back to the story of Shoes of Prey. We basically built out this value proposition for the mass market consumer. She delivered exactly what she'd asked for. In that time, we'd also gone on to raise an $8 million Series A round of funding, and then in the end, we also raised a $22 million Series B round of funding to help our expansion into the US market. We'd also moved our headquarters team from Sydney, where we'd started the business, over to LA. So we'd had 25, at the time we moved, we had 25 people in our headquarters in Sydney, and 23 of them ended up moving with us to Los Angeles about 6 years into the life of the business. So then we were based in LA for the last 4 years. And that was a real thrill. So we built out this value proposition. We were in 6 Nordstrom stores in the US with these kiosks where you could design your own shoes. Our business had grown from we were doing about $2 million in revenue about 2 years into the life of the business when we made that focus to focusing on that mass market fashion consumer. And then over the next 5 years, we'd grown to about a $12 million annual revenue run rate. We're doing about $1 million revenue a month. But we delivered the value proposition that mass market fashion customer had asked for, and we should have been at $100 million in revenue, and we needed to be at $25 to $30 million in revenue just to be breaking even, because now we had all these fixed costs of the software engineers and the user experience team and our factory, fixed costs with our factory in China. So we were less than half of the revenue we needed to be break even, and we were well under where all our forecasts for revenue had been. So we stepped back, and now we'd built the value proposition for that mass market fashion consumer. We could actually watch her behavior on our website and in the Nordstrom stores. And in doing that, what we realized was that mass market fashion consumer, consciously she thinks she wants to customize shoes. So if you ask her, would you like to design your own shoes? She says, yes, and that's a great idea. I'd love to. And then she'll give those reasons why she hasn't ordered yet and what we needed to do to deliver that value proposition to her. The challenge, what we saw when we actually delivered the value proposition, was that deep down subconsciously, that mass market fashion consumer didn't really want to design her own shoes. She really wanted to see what designs were popular on Instagram and in fashion magazines, and buy not only that design, but even that brand of shoes. So what she subconsciously wanted was essentially the antithesis of what she consciously wanted. And your subconscious is more powerful than your conscious mind. And so this mass market fashion consumer just wasn't buying. And that was because the value proposition we'd built was actually the polar opposite of what she really wanted. So we found ourselves in a pretty stuck position. We tried a couple of ways of pivoting the business. We tried pivoting into, we explored wedding shoes, which was a good niche for us. We explored extended sizing and widths, but there was no real way to pivot the business with the fixed cost base that we had. So we then worked on looking at how we could sell the business. That was also challenging because we had quite a complex business with a shoe factory in China and a Western fashion brand. So there was no kind of logical buyer who could run both those quite complex parts of the business. So ultimately, about 10 years after starting Shoes of Prey, we had to make the very difficult decision to close the business down. That was obviously a really challenging period, particularly that last sort of 18 months of the business, working through those pivots, having to make the call to close the business down. We had to lay off 200 people. A lot of those were people in team members in China who'd been with us for the 10 years, as well as the 23 team members who'd moved over from Sydney to the United States with us. Really, really tough 18 months there. We also had to call up our investors and let them know that we weren't going to be able to return the capital that they'd invested. And all up, we'd raised $35 million and we weren't able to return any of that to investors. A couple of those calls I remember making. So Rick Baker from Blackbird Ventures and Mike Cannon-Brooks from Grok Ventures, I specifically remember calling each of them separately to let them know, hey, we haven't been able to sell the business. I'm really sorry, but we're not going to be able to return the capital to you. And each of them, the first thing they said to me when I called them up was, how are you doing? And how's the team doing? And it was, deeply, deeply sort of moving thing to hear from these investors. You know, I'm telling them I've lost you millions of dollars, and they're actually concerned about, you know, how I and the team were all doing, working through it all. So I made a kind of mental note out of that to, you know, these are amazing people, people I'd love to work with again at some point in the future if that turned out to be possible to do. We closed down Shoes of Prey, finished up with that business. I took 6 months off. I kind of needed a break after that. Probably had some kind of mild version of PTSD, just sort of needed to take some time out and de-stress. So my wife's Danish. We went over to Denmark and just took 6 months off. And I really wasn't thinking through that period. I really wasn't thinking about what I wanted to do next. I just legitimately had a break. But I just naturally ended up sort of reading about different areas that interested me. And I'd gone vegetarian 5 years ago now, for me, for a mix of ethical, environmental, and health reasons. But I'd been eating a lot of the meat alternatives when I was living in the US. I was eating the Beyond Burgers and Impossible Burgers. In the 6 months in Denmark, I was eating all the European meat alternative products. So it was pretty clear that the best path for me to contribute to helping end industrial animal agriculture would be to produce, help the meat alternative industry grow. So deliver products that have the taste and texture of meat, but make it out of something other than animals. So I actually didn't want to start another business. I actively didn't want to do that. I think I was still burnt out from the Shoes of Prey experience. So I went out and I was still in Denmark. I was talking to all of the Australian meat alternative companies, whether those were startups or bigger companies entering the space. I was basically looking for a role in the meat alternative industry, but there weren't any jobs in the space. So I kind of got to a point where I had to make a decision. You know, do I go and get a job, you know, maybe back at Google where I'd been working prior to Shoes of Prey, or in an area that I'm not quite as passionate about? If I want to enter the meat alternative space, there's no job. So the only way I'm going to be able to do it is to start a business. So I managed to convince myself, all right, have a go at starting a business. In doing that, you'll meet all the other people in the category and, you know, maybe a job will come up and maybe the business will work out well. So started the journey, moved back to Australia 2 years ago now, and started the journey of ultimately what's turned into Fable. So in entering the space, I wanted to take a lot of the lessons that I'd learnt from Shoes of Prey and apply those into this new business. So one of those big lessons for me had been to work on something that you're deeply personally passionate about. With Shoes of Prey, there are a lot of things I loved about that business, but I wasn't particularly passionate about women's shoes or the fashion industry. So one of the good things with me for Fable was, you know, if money didn't matter, helping an industrial animal agriculture is what I wanted to work on. So that sort of lesson out of Shoes of Prey was one that was ticked in working on Fable. Our goal in developing the product was to try and get one of the world's or Australia's top chefs using the product. We figured if we could achieve that, we would have ticked the box on having developed a product that we're ready to launch. We were thrilled when Heston Blumenthal tried the product. Jim and Chris had a pre-existing relationship with him, so we met up with him. He tried the product, loved it, and ended up being our first customer, starting to use the product in his restaurants. Our first scaled customer was Marley Spoon, the meal kit company. So we ended up launching in December 2019, about 12 months after starting work developing the product. And then we spent 2020 rolling out the product across food service, meal kits, and retail. One of the other big lessons that I took out of Shoes of Prey that I've applied in Fable, and I'll touch on it briefly here because we're limited on time, was to get that market research right. So going back to the cause of Shoes of Prey not working out, it's basically because we failed on our market research. We misunderstood what that mass market fashion consumer wanted. And my big take out of the best way to do consumer research is, you know, it's good to talk to customers and ask what they want, but it's even better if you can watch their behavior. So in Shoes of Prey, we asked consumers what they wanted. They told us they wanted to design their own shoes. They actually didn't. And then once we watched their behavior, we realized that they didn't want to do it. So in co-founding Fable and working out what kind of product we wanted to develop, I spent a lot of time in Coles and Woolworths and other stores watching how consumers shopped the meat alternative category, seeing which products they picked up off the shelf and put back down on the shelf, which ones they picked up, put in their shopping basket and purchased. And then I'd creepily go up afterwards and have a chat to them and ask them, you know, what that one you picked up off the shelf and didn't buy, why didn't you buy that? And this one that you're going to buy, what caused you to purchase that? And that gave me, brought out a lot of lessons and ideas that have fed into the product, particularly around other consumers beyond just me wanting natural, healthy, whole food meat alternatives. So that was one of the other big lessons that I've taken out of the Shoes of Prey experience and applied into Fable. So another lesson that I took out of Shoes of Prey was setting up the business to be able to scale quickly for when big new customers come on board. And we were very fortunate early on in the life of Fable that our first big scaled customer was Marley Spoon, the meal kit business. And our very first big order that we received from them was for $100,000 worth of product. And you know, up until then, we'd only sold, you know, a couple of $100 worth of product into Heston and his restaurants. So we were fortunate that we were in the position where we could scale in and produce that order very quickly. I'd had the experience with Shoes of Prey initially of working with co-manufacturers who in the early days of Shoes of Prey were producing the products for us. So I'd gone out and found really good co-manufacturers to be able to do the production for us at Fable. And I'd made sure that they had production lines in place that were able to scale rapidly. And so we were in a position to be able to produce that order and deliver it to Marley Spoon really quickly. So yeah, happy to share. That's a quick overview of the entrepreneurial journey and some of my lessons out of Shoes of Prey. So thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Make It Happen show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And it doesn't need to end there. We've actually gone and grabbed a whole bunch of extra resources for you. Behind the scenes footage, videos from this and all the other episodes, as well as show notes that you can grab for free. Just head along to www.the-entourage.com/podcast and you can grab all those extra resources. Thanks for tuning in, and I cannot wait to introduce you to our next guest on the next episode.